As we've been hearing since the quake hit, Nepal was due for a big one, which raises a question about whether enough was done to prepare for it. James Jackson heads the Department of Earth Sciences at Cambridge University in the UK. He also works with the Earthquakes Without Frontiers project. In fact, just a week ago, he was in Kathmandu for a conference on earthquake preparedness.
The city has grown dramatically since the last time it was destroyed in 1934. So the population has increased hugely. There's a great pressure on space. A lot of the buildings were put up rather hurriedly without much thought about earthquake resistance and their construction. And of course, it's very crowded. So everyone knew that Kathmandu was not in a good position. But I have to say, there were some organizations within Nepal who are trying very hard to do the right thing by educating the public, by trying to train masons and builders in the details of the construction, which can make all the difference to whether something is safe or not. It's a huge task, but it's not as though people were sitting back and doing nothing.
How engaged is the Nepali government itself in earthquake preparedness?
The problem, though, you need to appreciate it, that in these big Asian cities, there are everyday worries and concerns that people have about terrible traffic, air pollution, air quality, food quality, water quality, let alone just poverty. And these things dominate your life. And yes, they're aware of earthquakes, but the earthquake threat by comparison seems rather remote compared to these daily worries people have. And the problem is one of prioritization. I think you and I would prioritize the same things they did, but doing that doesn't make the earthquake threat go away, which is what we've learned from this tragedy.
What are your greatest concerns right now?
The most obvious concern is whether this is over. This is a big earthquake. It's not as big as some of the ones in the past. And what is happening there is happening all the way along the entire Himalayan belt, from Kashmir in the west to Assam in the east. You get earthquakes everywhere. When one happens, of course, all it does is release the stress in that particular place, but it concentrates it on the places next door. So sooner or later, they will go. But whether they go tomorrow or in 10 years' time or in 100 years' time, we can't tell. All you can do is to say to people, well, you must prepare. You live in a place where these earthquakes happen again and again. So the worry is, I suppose, whether the thing will just quietly peter out with the aftershocks over the next few months or whether it will trigger another one. But in the long run, historically, of course, it will trigger another one. We just don't know when.
Finally, tell me what Earthquakes Without Frontiers, the project, what does it actually do? What are you trying to achieve?
What we're trying to achieve is to get people to learn from each other and help each other across this great belt. Because as I say, the problems in Nepal are not that different from problems in other big cities in the Middle East and Central Asia, many of which have been destroyed in the past. They've been destroyed because that is where the trade routes go through. So the big cities are usually on the edges of mountains or deserts or high plateaus. That's where people can live. But those features are controlled by the faults which move in earthquakes. So the edges of the mountains are there because the faults are there. And yet that's where people live. So the great growth of population in Asia since the Second World War has concentrated populations in the dangerous places. That's the difficulty. And that's why we all face the same problem and we can learn from each other.
James Jackson, the principal investigator of the Earthquakes Without Frontiers project at Cambridge University. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
One of our first impulses when we hear about a disaster like the one in Nepal is to try and help. We've pulled together a list of 7 vetted charities doing relief work following the earthquake. That list with links is at PRI.org. Thousands of people are at the airport in Kathmandu right now, waiting for a chance to leave Nepal after Saturday's earthquake. They'll need a lot of patience. The airport was heavily damaged by the quake, and international aid flights are also trying to land there. The need for help is enormous, both in Kathmandu and outside the city. Later on The World, we'll hear how Nepalis in New York are reacting to the disaster back home. But first, what does a seismologist make of it?
My first reaction was, actually, thank goodness it was only a 7.8 or 7.9, because it could have been much larger.
That's Roger Billum. He's a professor of geology at the University of Colorado Boulder and a specialist on the geology of the Himalayas.
The Himalayas are in a region, a transition region, between the Tibetan Plateau and the Indian continent, which is moving northwards. Nepal is being squeezed at about 18 millimeters per year, which, of course, mounts up 1.8 meters per century, 18 meters per thousand years. And that slip is kind of locked. It's a potential spring that is released during large earthquakes. And the longer you wait, the larger the earthquake.
So when you talk about the compression coming from the north and the south, you're talking the compression of plates, tectonic plates next to each other, and they kind of pop, right?
Exactly. Now, the fault that earthquakes occur on in the Himalaya is unusual in that it's horizontal. If you imagine California, the faults are vertical, and one can speak of living from 50 kilometers from a fault and worrying about it. In Nepal, the horizontal fault is directly below your feet everywhere. And that is the fault you really have to worry about. And in this case, it slipped about 3.5 meters, or roughly 2 meters on average, which means everything on the surface, the mountains, the fields, the hills, the cities, they all slipped southward in about 30 seconds, those 2 meters. And that's what's caused the damage.
So you're literally like two dinner plates, one slipping on top of each other.
Exactly. You can think of it almost like a rug being pulled southward abruptly, pulling the mountains with it.
So there was that big earthquake in Kashmir, the Pakistani earthquake in 2005. Is this the same fault line or same network of fault lines?
Same network, but the Kashmir earthquake occurred on a much steeper fault, dipping about 40 degrees to the north. This one is almost horizontal. And so this is the first time we've seen a Himalayan earthquake like this since the development of the seismometer. So we are learning a huge amount about what actually happens in these Himalayan earthquakes. And in fact, it will be a key to not only future earthquakes, but to historical earthquakes that we know about in the past.
Yeah, so geologists know this is an earthquake active part of the world. How predictable then was this disaster, the latest one?
Well, unfortunately, none of these earthquakes are predictable in the sense that we know nothing about the timing. However, we do know that they are inevitable, and we can calculate the size that an earthquake would be were it to occur now. So we had a very good idea about the size of this particular earthquake. It occurred in a region that had an earthquake in 1833. The convergence rate, the compression rate since then has amounted to about 3.2 meters, which is, as it happens, about what occurred in this earthquake. Further along the arc to the west, we know that an earthquake hasn't occurred for about 500 years or perhaps more. And in those regions, the amount of slip is considerably more that will go in the next earthquake. And although we don't know the timing of this future earthquake, we know that it will be a much larger event of the order of 8.4, 8.6.
And in some of these areas of Nepal where, as you say, the kind of geological tension is built up over centuries, what could that spell?
Okay, we've identified almost six segments along the Himalaya that are overdue for earthquakes, great earthquakes. And there's a sort of sense of disbelief in those regions because there hasn't been a recent earthquake that reminds local inhabitants that these things happen. But we know that from GPS measurements in these locations that the spring is being wound up. There's no avoiding a future earthquake. It's going to happen. And when an earthquake like the present one occurs, one must hope that it's a kind of wake-up call for local authorities to realize that future earthquakes will happen in their regions too.
Roger Billam, Professor of Geological Science at the University of Colorado Boulder. Thank you very much for explaining this to us.
You're welcome.
I'm Marco Werman with The World. Let's circle back to our top story now, the aftermath of Nepal's devastating earthquake. The death toll is still rising as rescuers continue the painful task of digging through the wreckage for survivors and victims. In Nepal's capital, Kathmandu, many residents are still too afraid to sleep indoors, and they're worried about what the immediate future will bring. I spoke earlier with Niyama Sering Sherpa, who was visiting family in the capital when the quake struck.
I was in a third-story building, and certainly the earthquake started happening, and I was in a panic, and me and my younger brother, younger sister were there, and everything started breaking down, all the glasses falling down from the rack, and I was in a panic, and then I was staying at the corner near to the wall until the earthquake calmed down.
Did the building collapse, or did it stay standing?
It was standing, but I see from outside after the earthquake calmed down, then it was cracked from the bottom side badly.
And what is the village where you're from in the mountains? And are you hearing news from that village?
I'm from Namche Bazaar. It's called Gateway to the Everest region. Some of the old houses are damaged, but no one is hurt from Namche, whereas in the middle of the city, like in Bhaktapur, which is like an old city, those houses are collapsed. Even the Prime Minister Quarter, the Royal Palace, all the walls are broken. Most of the historic places, palaces, stupa buildings are destroyed.
Niyama, I'm just curious. You're in Kathmandu right now. Uh-huh. Where are you sleeping now? Are you in one of those tent encampments?
Right now, it's more safer on the ground. Me and my rest of the family were sleeping in a tent. And I've been outside of Kathmandu today. And I think I will say like 100% people are sleeping outside on open fields or on a street or wherever they find a open place. They are not sleeping anymore in their houses.
What news have you gotten about the fatalities at Everest and along the trails to Everest Base Camp?
Okay, from Everest Base Camp, there are like all together 18 people died, 18 climbers died, 13 are Nepali Sherpas, 5 foreigners, and there were like 38 injured people, among which 6 are injured. They are already in Kathmandu. So there were like lots of heli charter done from Everest Base Camp.
What does any of this kind of lead you to thinking about the work that you do, getting people up to the mountain? Obviously, this is an earthquake. You couldn't have known this was going to happen. But again, it does show the risks of what you people do.
So compared to the last year, like a few of my friends have already quit their job. But it's not easy for everyone to do other works before like climbing mountains. But you know, long run, there will be very few people who does this kind of risky work. If they get other opportunity, I don't think people are going to go up to the mountain and risk their life again. After like 2014, like 16 Sherpa died, and this year again, like this sad incident happened. It's been a very sad moment for the whole places, for all Nepal.
Niyama, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it. And stay safe.
Thank you very much. Thank you.